We are back in the USA, and you are back listening to another episode of the West Ham Way USA podcast. I'm Tony in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Brawley just outside of St. Louis in Illinois. We have a lot to talk about today, my man. Crazy trip for me in the UK and a shit show yesterday up in Sheffield. So how are you going to start us off? What you got going on lately?
Is it too early to talk about VAR? Is it too early for that?
We're going to get into that later because you and I, think, are going to have a very good discussion. I think, folks, one time we're finally not going to agree on everything, but that it's a bit early. It's a little bit early for that.
Well, if it's too early for that, then we can get into your trip to the UK. How was it? Did you have a good time?
Yeah, it was fun. I stayed longer than I normally do, and I got to go to two games for West Ham, and I went to a whole bunch of other. But I got right off the airport, right off the airplane at Heathrow, and went straight to the London Stadium. Went to the Bournemouth game, which was David Moyes' first game, yep. Which was a pleasant surprise 4-0 win. Since we didn't talk about that last week, what did you think of that performance? Pretty impressive.
It was really good. I thought Bournemouth were shocking. I thought Bournemouth were terrible. I thought they were absolutely horrendous. But nonetheless, you can only beat what's in front of you, and we did that, and we played pretty well, and we scored some good goals. It could have been 6 or 7. So Fabianski played well. So I thought across the board it was a really good performance, and you were lucky you got to see it.
Yeah, I was. So we have our buddy Steve Potter was there, and we were yelling 9-0, he's on the pitch, and then all of a sudden we scored 3 goals in the first 30 minutes, and he was about wetting himself a little nervous. Yeah, that was a fun time, and then I went up to Oxford to see some of my friends from when I went to school there for a bit, and then the craziest day. So our buddy is close to doing the 92, that would be all 92 grounds in the top 4 leagues in England,
yep.
Going to visit them, and he was at 82 to start our weekend, and we decided that we would go on a footballing adventure, and we went to see 3 games in one day.
Wow.
So we went to 3 yep. different brand new grounds for him, which were also new for me. We started the game, we went to Rochdale versus Newcastle up north, which was absolutely incredible. The
FA Cup.
Yeah, that was the FA Cup. Rochdale scored late. It was to equalize, force a replay. That was awesome. Then we left and went to Salford versus Walsall, which was a league, I want to say League 2.
I think it's League 2.
Yeah, yes. League 2 league game, two. Just a league match. And then we had to leave that one early just so that we could get to the last one in time, which was then Fleetwood versus Portsmouth in the FA Cup, which was really cool. I would say my favorite game we went to was the Rochdale game, that late equalizer for them. I mean, we were jumping up and down, and we're West Ham fans, you know what I'm saying? Did not expect to be getting into that game. The Salford game had really good food in the concourse. That was about it for that one.
Interesting.
That was interesting because we were on the terrace, so we were just standing there leaning up against the poles. We weren't in seats, which is like safe standing. I think a few MLS stadiums have that, and none of them in the Premier League do. And then last, the best stadium we went to, though, in my opinion, was Fleetwood. We were terraced again there, but then underneath our stand, there was a super really cool sports bar underneath that had really good beer. So overall, that was a crazy day.
Yeah, I watched the entire Rochdale-Newcastle game. So, I don't think I saw you guys know, but it was really cool. I thought the atmosphere was fantastic, and it's always good when you get a League One, League Two team going up against a Premier League team. The atmosphere is always great. I mean, you got to see that when you went to the Gillingham game. I'm sure the atmosphere there was great. It's their cup final when those lower league teams get to play those Premier League teams. So they're always up for it, and you always have to watch out for them because they can usually sneak up on you and catch a result. And Rochdale did that against Newcastle. So, yeah, really cool. And especially when they equalized late on, that even adds even more excitement to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then for a fourth new ground for me over the weekend was, yes, I was at the Gillingham FA Cup game for us, which was really, really bizarre. The atmosphere in the home end for Gillingham, like you said, was kind of like the Rochdale, which they were up for. It was their cup final. They're playing against the big boys at home, point to prove, all of that. The atmosphere in the away end was really, really bizarre. At the beginning of the game and even pre-match, it was just weird. nervous, surprisingly, atmosphere, in my opinion. The other thing that didn't help was the away stand doesn't have a cover, so that sound just goes straight up in the air. I thought, myself included, I thought we were all very quiet, or at least where my seats were, closer to the corner. For the Gillingham game, but overall, once we got into the game, eventually, I mean, they looked really up for it, and we just came out lackluster. Fornals, though, how about that man? What an impact he's been.
Yeah, I was shocked. Not to jump around, but I was shocked he didn't start against this most recent game against Sheffield United. He did make a big difference when he came on. I thought we were being overrun in midfield before he came on, and then when he came on, did he come on at halftime? Was that right?
No, I believe the 70th minute.
So it was late in the game, but once he came on, it seemed to switch the game a little bit. The first goal went in, as you know. Zabaleta scores his first ever goal for West Ham. I talked about it on the last pod a little bit on my little monologue that I did. And I also mentioned the fact that we could see you in the away end when you were jumping and then started sprinting down the stairs, so we could see you. So,
yeah, that was awesome.
Hopefully, our listeners have seen it.
Yeah, running down the stairs, it was hilarious. We were when he scored, it was right in front of me. Just ran down the stairs, and I wanted to jump the board, but you know, I wasn't trying to get any bans or get kicked out of the country. But it was pretty cool celebration there.
And then what Fornals scored at virtually the last kick of the game, the 92nd or 93rd minute, and then you guys get to go home happy.
Yes, it was a two-hour drive back home, so it really felt good that we got that result, and especially that second goal, just to ease the pressure, because toward the end there, they were pushing for that late equalizer, and you're just everybody, including myself, just standing there thinking, you know they're going to score. You almost knew Gillingham was going to score. But they didn't, and we saw it through with a nice FA Cup win there. And then Monday went to play some cricket during the daytime, and then evening watched the Arsenal FA Cup game against Leeds and the draw. So what do you think about our draw against West Brom at home?
Well, it's I think it's a good draw for us. I'm kind of glad it's not a League 2 or a League 1 team. But at the same time, they are in form, West Brom, and we are not. I don't know how seriously Slav and Dixie will take it. I'm sure they will, because it's their homecoming, and they're going to be coming home, and the guys are going to be up for it. I'm sure of that. But I think it's a winnable fixture, especially at home. Although, that being said, our home form is just shocking. So I don't know. I don't know what to think of it. Obviously, I would have liked Millwall. That's the one everyone wanted. And West Brom, though, I think is beatable. But again, they're in form, we're not. So I don't know what to think about it. It didn't get picked for TV, so it's not going to get moved. So that's good.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted Millwall as well, but I'm also kind of glad we didn't. For the fact that if we ever drew them, I'd be booking my flight the next day. And this trip ran out all of my funds, so I would have to be begging somebody or taking out a loan just so I could go back for the next round. But yeah, I mean, it was overall an awesome trip. I wouldn't say I'm glad to be back in America, but I am a bit glad to be home and back to reality, and then back to work. So, speaking of work, we also had a game on Friday while I was at work. Were you working?
I was working, but I did get to watch the whole thing. So
yes, I watched on my phone at the office as well, so don't tell my boss there. I was still working, but I had it on in the corner there. where do we even begin on that?
Well, the lineup, I was disappointed. Well, when I first saw it, I assumed we were playing five at the back, which turned out not to be the case. We were playing 4-4-1-1, 4-4-2, with Anderson just slightly behind Allaire. But I still thought Allaire was way too isolated in the game, but that's neither here nor there right now. So I was really confused as to why Cresswell was playing left center back over Issa Diop, but that turned out Cresswell was playing left back. Masuaku, surprisingly, playing left wing, which I was excited to see. I thought he did okay at times. Still not enough final product for me. He has to be able to either find the pass or beat his man, which at times last game he was doing, but then most of the time he wasn't. He was getting caught out. So that was frustrating. And then I, for the life of me, don't understand Lanzini over Fornals. I don't know what Lanzini offers right now. I've said it for about two seasons now. I don't think he's up to standard. I don't know why the West Ham fans are in love with him. I know Dave Walker and X feel pretty much the same way I do this whole time, and we've been saying it this whole time. And I think last night, finally, people are starting to realize how Lanzini's not that good anymore. Especially he was one-on-one with the goalkeeper, or two-on-none, really. He could have slid it over for Haller for a tap-in, and he didn't. He took it on himself and shot it straight at the goalkeeper. So those are my frustrations with the lineup.
The thing with Lanzini, and I will beat the same drum over and over, is we saw Lanzini really come to fruition when he had Dimitri Payet with him. Because Dimitri Payet opened so much space for Lanzini to shine. Also, Dimitri Payet was a world-class, just crazy talent and played incredible while he was at West Ham. But Payet was able to pull players away, which opened space for Lanzini to maneuver. Now that Lanzini needs to be the Payet, because that's literally what he has to be. He has to be the creator. If he's going to sit right in the middle of the field, he needs to open the ball up for Anderson, for Allaire, and it's just not happening. It's not happening. Everybody, you know, those three for me have been the biggest disappointment this season. Anderson, Allaire, and Lanzini. None of them been able to play together. None of them have been able to shine with or without each other. I mean, these three players are supposed to be our difference makers, and none of them have stepped up. Whether it's their fault or not, none of them have stepped up. The only one who's stepping up right now is Fornals. That's it. And he's the youngest one who came in on £20 million and had to get adjusted. Everybody else, though, these are world-class £40 million players, and Lanzini's been in the Premier League long enough that he shouldn't have to adjust.
Yeah, I agree. And Anderson I actually thought was okay at times again. He's starting to come to life a little bit under Moyes. I thought he was better than he had been all season under Pellegrini last night against Sheffield United. Still not superb, but I thought he's better. He's been... I've been getting on the edge of my seat more and more watching him with Moyes and versus Pellegrini. I knew he was just going to give up and give the ball away. I want him to drive and attack and take on a man or find that pass. And he's been doing that to a certain extent over the last two or three games, which has been more impressive.
Yeah, but that the bar is set so low. The bar is set so low with what he has done and what the team has done with Pellegrini. I see it all over Twitter. People were I put out a tweet yesterday how I thought it wasn't good enough that, okay, we would have drawn without your VAR. We'll get into VAR in a minute, so don't jump on my neck. But I said that even if that would have stood, a 1-1 draw against Sheffield, which, yeah, they're flying high and playing well, but at the same time, I genuinely try not to be deluded. I really do think that we are a better team on paper, and if we showed up, now the game's not played on paper, but if we showed up, I genuinely think that we have a better side than Sheffield. And I felt that way against a lot of teams that we played this season on the road and at home that we didn't show up. So in reality, yeah, we may have been playing better under Moyes, but the bar was set so low with Pellegrini that, well, these aren't the aspirations of what we had this season. So
no, but
a 1-0 draw and not showing up, because or 0-0 because of the mistake, or 1-1 because of the VAR, whatever you thought was the deserved output of that game, it still was not a good enough performance against Sheffield United.
I think you got to look at it with a little context. I think you're looking at it as if it was the beginning of the season. Sheffield United are newly promoted. Sheffield United are fifth. They're fifth in the Premier League.
Yeah, I know, mean, where they stand, and I still genuinely don't think that they are the best side. I mean, look at Burnley. Burnley finished what, sixth or fifth the other year, and they're back to reality. Whether you finish fifth, it doesn't mean that they're the best team.
I don't think anyone's saying they're the better team. I'm saying away from home, it's never easy to win a game, right? It's never easy to win a game in the Premier League. Most fans would agree that I would have taken a draw before the game. 100% I would have taken a draw before the game. Sheffield United have beaten, I think they've beaten four of the top six this season, the normal top six. And they haven't lost more than two games in a row this season. I would have gladly taken a 0-0 or a 1-1. Now, the performance wasn't great. I agree with you that. I don't think we were spectacular, but I don't think we were terrible either. We had chances to score. Yes, I think at the end of the game, we only had two shots on target, which in itself is unacceptable. I agree
one
with
was
you
a
there.
Free kick.
and one of them was a free kick that Lanzini hit. It was a great free kick. I was when he stepped up to take that free kick, I was like, Lanzini, you fucking suck. You're so bad. You're terrible. Please. Because anytime I talk shit about a player, he always ends up scoring. So I was hoping that reverse psychology was going to work, and it didn't. But nonetheless, I think we had chances to score. I think the work rate was good. I think the effort was there in the game. I think we sat off. We showed them a little bit too much respect at times. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's crazy. I don't think Sheffield United were that good. I don't think they were that great. Even Chris Wilder at the end of the game, the Sheffield United manager,
but
said
that's my point.
They weren't that great either.
But then that's my point. If you want to be a big team and you want to get results and you want to finish fifth in that,
baby steps.
Oh, no. But my point is, you just said that they didn't play well. Neither team played well, right? Well, that's when you need to take advantage, no?
Baby steps. We got to walk before we can crawl, or we got to crawl before we can walk. Excuse me. We're in 16th. We might be in the relegation zone in about 35 minutes if Southampton, if Villa or Watford end up winning. I think we could end up in the relegation zone in about 30 minutes. We have to get points. I agree with you. At the beginning of the season under Pellegrini, I was saying, especially the Sheffield United game, that this was a game we needed to win. We need points. We're in trouble. Fabianski's out for the season. We're in trouble. So we need points.
Well, then that's the way to get it. when you're playing against a team that didn't play well, you need to capitalize. And sure, you're saying baby steps, but that is my point. Whether you're trying to dig out of a relegation battle or pressing for Europe, which, quite frankly, I understand and I'm okay with not getting Europe, but I'm also not okay with all this, we're a big side and we want to be a big team and we need mentality changes and we need to put the effort forward. When you can't beat a team like Sheffield, who I, again, do not believe that. But we just got done saying that they didn't play well, and I really don't think they're that good of a side. Then that's when you need to capitalize and get points, Mr. Relegation Battle. I mean, you got to get your points.
Well, no shit, you got to get your points. But a draw at Sheffield United is not a bad result when you look at everything. Now, in a vacuum, if you look just on paper at the beginning of the season, losing 1-0 at Sheffield United is painful. Losing right now 1-0 Sheffield United is painful. But when you look at the fact that we had a couple of chances and we had a goal chalked off our VAR, I'm saying that a 1-1 result is a good result at the end of the day against Sheffield United, who currently sit in a European spot in the Premier League. I'm not saying it's ideal, and I'm not saying that this excuses anything that's gone on in the past, but what I'm saying is we have to start to right the ship. And to right the ship, I agree with you, you need wins. But I'm saying a draw, that performance was good enough to get a draw against Sheffield United, which for me, it would have been a great result at the end of the day. I don't care. I know you're going to say we need to win games. I get that. But I'm saying we have to be able to start to accumulate things on a regular basis. Win, draw, win, draw, win, draw, that sort of thing. We need those points. The way we lost the game was heartbreaking. We'll get into VAR in a second. I won't go into that right now. But all I'm saying is you can't be that critical of this team, of Sheffield United, saying we're going up against a terrible team, which they are not terrible. They've proven that they are a very good side, a damn good side that might well be playing European football next season. And on paper, I agree with you, they're a championship team, but this manager has them playing at an extremely high level. And sure, their manager might say we didn't play that well, but at the end of the day, I would have gladly taken a 1-1 or a 0-0 draw. And yeah, you're going to be very hard-pressed to change my mind on that.
I guess my main frustration comes in is even if they were 10th, and I mean, even they're 5th and they are up there and they're getting results, right? And I agree with you. I really do on that front. But if you look at some of our fixtures, man, I mean, yes, they were under Pellegrini, so I can't be too critical. But it's like when we went to Wolves and lost 2-0, Burnley 3-0, Everton 2-0, lost 1-0 to Sheffield, 2-2 at Bournemouth. I mean, 0-0 at Villa, and then the 1-1 draw at Brighton. These are all mid-table teams, and then fifth Sheffield, that if you want to change your mentality and change this club, those are you can't just rely on beating Norwich and then showing up against Man United and Chelsea twice a year.
But what I'm saying is this winning mentality that was under Pellegrini. This is Moyes now. We have to start taking some baby steps in the right direction. We're not going to go out and win every game under Moyes. And I understand what you're saying is we have some tough results. So ideally we would have beaten Sheffield United. I don't disagree with that. But what I'm saying is you have to instill a relegation winning mentality to get out of this mess we're in. And then next season we start looking at that winning mentality again. We are not a big six team this year. Not now. We're not going to be. It's not going to happen. So this whole winning big team mentality, that's not going to happen this season. We have to be the mentality of we're scrapping for our fucking lives and we need every little point we can get. And starting with that point against Sheffield United would have been fantastic.
I just think it's a shame that you have to wait to the 80 that they had to scrap by and create rarely any chances to the 89th minute to try and to get an equalizer. Then it's ripped away. Like I mean, I guess so. Are you ready for the VAR? Do you have anything else on the Sheffield game?
It can tie into both either way.
Because I just want to start by saying, and this is my biggest frustration with the VAR discussion. I'll state my point that I agree the rule is dumb. The handball rule. And I want to state that I think VAR is very – I think they got the call right. I just think it's a bad rule. And a little bit of the implementation of the VAR has been poor. But back to my original discussion is there's a lot of people who are using VAR as a smokescreen that are saying – to ignore the fact that we did not play that well. You, on the other hand, told me yesterday, which I agree with you, that you can independently not like VAR and think we've played bad. And I think, and that's my point of view. I agree with that 100%. But there's a lot of people who are using it as a smokescreen to ignore the fact that we needed a late equalizer against a Sheffield team that did not play well yesterday, and nor did we, and we would have been bailed out by Snodgrass. Also, the fact that Snodgrass has been our difference maker in that game is also a sad reality. But I overall, it's just a shame that we needed VAR to get a draw.
Well, I agree and disagree with most of what you said there. First off, I thought the performance was good enough to warrant a draw in that game. I do not think we deserve to lose, and that's where we disagree. I don't think we deserve to lose that game. Sheffield United had one or two chances. David Martin made a good save. Fabianski made a good save or two, but we also had two chances to score. We also had a third that was ruled out as invisible because it didn't happen, but we ended up scoring from it. So while I agree with two shots on goal is not good enough, with the quality of the chances that happened were good enough to score. Lanzini's free kick was a great shot. Good save by Henderson. I think Haller hit the target once, and that was a pretty good attempt. And then Snodgrass scored at the end of the game, and it gets ruled out. Okay. We played good enough to get a draw. I'm gonna say that right now. We played good enough to get a draw. It was not great. It was not horrendous, but it was good enough to get a draw. And I think David Moyes said at the end of the game he was really proud of the way we played, blah, 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 all the stuff the new manager would say to try to get the players behind him. But I do think we played – I don't even want to say good enough. We played okay enough to get a draw. Now, I understand why you and everyone else would be upset by that. Even me to a certain extent. I thought the game was drab and at times very, very bland and very meh. But at the end of the day, I think a loss is not indicative really of the way that game went. Now I'll go into VAR. I think everyone by this time knows my stance on VAR. I would like to see it gone away for the rest of the season. Obviously, it's not going to happen. It's here. It's the same set of rules for an entire season. So that's not going to happen. The rule, as you said, is correct. And I actually talked with Bobby Madley this morning. He messaged me and said that VAR, And by the way, guys, Bobby Madley does have a full-length interview coming out on BBC One, which we won't be able to see in the United States. But he sat down with the BBC and did a full-length interview about why he had to leave refereeing. So keep an eye out for that. But I messaged him because I think I sent to our group chat, you saw the screenshot of the deflections handball rule, right? Did you see what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I sent that same screenshot to him and say, can you explain why this is incorrect and why the handball was given? And And for those that maybe didn't see it, the rule on the Premier League website for deflections and handballs is this. So a handball will not be awarded if the ball touches the player's hand, arm directly from their own head, body, foot, or the head, body, foot of another player who is close nearby. Now, he clarified and said that is in the defensive phase of the game. So if you're defensively, a handball will not be awarded if those things happen. Now, in the attacking phase, it doesn't matter if it's deliberate, intentional, if it touches your hand in any way, shape, or form, that it's going to be ruled out. This is what his exact message said. He said, "That's correct, mate. It wouldn't be deemed a deliberate handball. However, deliberate or not, if the ball touches the arm in the build-up to a goal, then the goal is correctly ruled out. It was correctly, in law, ruled out last night. Not saying I agree with it or even like that law, but refs have to follow them, and they were correct to rule it out." So, as you said, the ruling is correct. We can't argue that. It is a absolutely horrendous rule. It is a terrible, terrible, terrible rule. And if you went and listened to the last episode, for anyone that didn't listen, you will hear Bobby Madley say that he thinks it's horrendous, it's bad, and that he thinks it's going to be slightly modified at the end of the season to say in the immediate buildup or some sort of modification that says if the guy is 35 yards away from goal and there's three passes in between the handball and the goal, that goal is still going to stand if the modification comes through, which would be a good thing. I think we would all agree, because I think 99% of football fans that the vibe I was getting on Twitter were on our side, saying that definitely should be a goal. The game's gone. What is going on? Why are we taking away these celebrations? Why on earth is this happening? Because ultimately the game's gone. As far as I'm concerned, go ahead.
I want to argue one point here that really, really annoys me, and you're my pal, but it's so annoying, which I probably annoy you too in other ways. I absolutely hate people who are saying that it's taking away celebrations.
Oh, it is, 100%.
It's not, because here's the thing. Did you see the limbs yesterday?
And it took it away.
No, but it's not stopping it from happening. It took away the goal, but it's not stopping the limbs. It's not stopping the celebrations. It's taking away the goal. You have to go back and you're like, oh man, that was awesome, but it didn't count. But it's not taking away you from celebrating. More so what I'm trying to say is I see people say, well, I don't know if I can celebrate anymore. That's what I'm referring to. I'm referring to the people who say, I don't know if I should celebrate anymore. I have to wait to see the VAR. But that's not true, because you've had 6 months
now. Not in
all
cases.
That's not true, because you've had 6 months of VAR, and did you see the way that the West Ham fans celebrated yesterday?
Yeah, it was great scenes. It
was
fantastic.
Great scenes, right. So the VAR took away the goal after the celebration, but it didn't stop anybody. Nobody was standing there saying, oh, damn, you know, I wonder if I should celebrate. Let me wait 15 seconds before I jump up and down and act like a maniac.
There are fans who are doing that. There are fans who are doing that. I've seen it in other games, not just West Ham games this season, especially when they think either the play was offside or it hit a hand in the buildup. There are fans who have not been celebrating to the full extent. I agree with you in that. In that one, if you look at one incident, if you look at that one case, the scenes were great. But I'm not saying you can't say that for every goal that's gone in this season, that there haven't been muted celebrations, because there have been.
And I don't say this to rub it into people who don't get to go often as much as I do, but I don't want one person to message me on some bullshit saying, oh, well, you know, you weren't there, or you don't go, so how would you know? No, I've been to a few games this year that had VAR, so just I'm putting that out there. Because I already know I'm probably gonna get some stupid messages like, "Well, if you were there every week, you know, you would understand." No, shut the fuck up. What I'm referring to though is I was at the Brighton game when it was 1-1, you know, and the VAR on that game. I was at a few other games, and then other people were at other games too. I'm just saying, you still celebrate. You go to an NFL game, and you know, you think it might be pass interference, but they score the touchdown. You celebrate. It's people not wanting to celebrate. That's the problem. People not accepting it. If we scored a goal, you can celebrate and then wait for the VAR check. It's just being a dickhead and trying to say, oh well, VAR this.
Well, you think that, but I'm telling you that there are people who I know factually And that case last night was a rare example. In the 92nd minute, that goal goes in. There's going to be incredible scenes. The atmosphere, from what I've heard in that game, before the game, after the game, was pretty nasty and pretty hostile. And so everyone's energies were built up. I'm saying that is a rare example. But I'm also saying I've seen other games. Now I can't think of an example off the top of my head. But sure. There's been games this season that a goal has gone in, like the middle of a game, to make it 1-0 or 1-1, where it's just an average goal. And the celebrations have seemed muted until the VAR check is complete, and that's when people have celebrated. I have seen that. You'd be very hard pressed to change my mind on that, because I've seen it this season.
But that's
now you wouldn't. Well, but it's changing how people. It is changing how people celebrate goals. It is changing it.
If you want to,
celebrate, it might not change celebrate. You. It might not change your opinion, but I'm saying it. People have a tough time getting their head around having to wait for 2 minutes to come to a decision, and then that's when they celebrate. So you might feel that way.
Celebrate twice.
Or you don't celebrate at all. That way you're not let down whenever the goal gets ruled out.
That's just okay. I just think that's a very miserable, cynical outtake. Not from you, but just from someone who's like, well, I'm not going to celebrate till the VAR check is done. Well, then you're just miserable. Like that. I don't even like VAR. I don't even like VAR. I want it to go away too. But I'm also think it's absolutely ridiculous that if for someone to say like there's so many other reasons VAR sucks than it's taking away scenes. So many other problems with it.
Let me continue on my point here. Yes. Of not liking VAR, because I think that was good. I don't know where this was on, but I saw a comment somewhere, and this guy said, and this is what he said about VAR. He said, the thing I'm most gutted about isn't we didn't draw, but the fact that my 3-year-old son cheered when we scored, and that was my first father-son moment as a West Ham fan with my son at the game. A moment I will always remember when that equalizer went in, just to be wiped out by VAR, by an incredible decision. I'm gutted because that would have stayed with me for life, and VAR ruined that. What is your response to that?
I think the rule of the handball is dumb, but VAR got the call correct. I think VAR. I mean, I've seen VAR this season. I wouldn't say ruin scenes, but think, my issue is the offsides. Okay, I'm not worried about this handball. I'm going to respond to you in a second. The reason I don't like VAR is because of the way that they've handled the implementation for the offside rule. Okay, but I don't like this rule with the handball, but the VAR got it correct. It sucks. I would have rather us equalized as well, and I feel for this guy. But they got the call correct. The law sucks, but VAR was correct this time. This is not a VAR issue on this instance.
It is and it isn't. So what people are getting hung up on is if VAR wasn't there, that goal would have stood. That's what they're saying. So I don't think people are saying VAR is a problem, but without VAR, that goal still stands. So it is slightly a VAR problem. It is 99%. The rule is terrible, and if you get rid of that rule, then VAR allows that goal. So I see what you're saying, but I'm saying other people are viewing it as if VAR wasn't there, that goal counts. So therefore, VAR is terrible. I'm not saying that's right or wrong.
Up for Sheffield, I don't want to say I'm sticking up for Sheffield, but then there'd be the Sheffield Way USA podcast would be out here saying, oh, man, we were robbed of 3 points. Wish we had VAR. This is ridiculous.
No one, not even a player, was complaining about handball in that game. I don't even think the cameras would have gone back to that replay and found that handball. That is the VAR. That's a referee at Stockley Park who has rewound that video to find something, and he found it. It's correct. It is correct. He implemented the rule correctly, and Michael Oliver rightly overturned it. But there wasn't a player on that pitch who was going to the referee and saying that was a handball. Not a single one. I don't think you'd have people in this circumstance, in this one case, I don't think people were going to go back and bitch and moan and say that was terrible and egregious. I swear to you, I don't think that's the case.
Right, but if they, I'm saying if they went back and got the call correct, Okay. Which we both agree the rule is dumb, but they got the call correct. Do we agree?
Yeah, okay. That's right.
So if they didn't go back, that means that the call was missed. If they didn't go back and fix it, I'm saying the call would have been missed.
Okay, yes, you're right. I agree with that.
I'm saying that if I'm a Sheffield fan, even though I may have never even known, right? But if somebody would have seen it, then it would have been on Twitter, and then it would have blown up, and then we would have been on Match of the Day, and how Sheffield was robbed of 3 points, and West Ham got lucky, and blah 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 blah, because they missed the handball. So it goes both ways. It feels like West Ham, and I really do think we get screwed by the implementation of VAR getting calls correct now more than any other team, just like we feel like we got calls missed when we didn't have VAR more than any other team. It sucks. I really wish we would have drawn. I really wish VAR didn't overturn it. But back to the whole point is we should have never even been in this situation. But that's just a whole nother circle that we don't really need to revisit.
No, we don't, because we disagree on it. I don't think that's going to change.
If we handled our business, we would have needed VAR to overturn that.
Yeah, I'm not going to go back to it. What I want to finish up on VAR about is at the end of the day, these decisions are taking away these memories of fans and is taking away the ability to have those amazing scenes, and it be for absolutely nothing. I am tired of it. I'm sick and tired of it. I really am. And until next season, I knew there were going to be teething problems, but I did not foresee this being that big of an issue. And it sucks that every single game we're talking about VAR, we're not talking about the game, and it's criminal. It's not the way it should be. It should not be the headline. I think the episode with Bobby Madley I just did, I think that answers a lot of questions that people had about it, which is great. But at the end of the day, the referees don't feel good about it either. And so it's not the referees' fault. I'm not mad at the referees. There's no way Michael Oliver could have seen that handball in person, and that's the way it should be. He didn't see it. The play carries on, and it goes in. Declan Rice, what is he meant to do in that position? Is he supposed to
– or Antonio pull, a few weeks ago.
Pull his hand. We've had three or four of them this season. What are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to just run with your arms behind your – behind your back? No, you're not going to do that because it's not natural. The defender heads it straight against his arm. I mean, why? What on earth do you expect the guy to do in that situation? Now, I know it's just bad luck. That's all it is. It's what it comes down to. It's just very unlucky. And we're very unlucky with the way the rule sits as it does today. But Declan Rice said even the players right now, or even at the beginning of the season, they didn't want VAR. They still don't want it, and they feel very hard done by. And Chris Wilder, after the game, even said, I don't feel good about that goal being ruled out. We got lucky from it. I'll take it. But that the way that sits with me is totally wrong. And the way it sits with me personally right now, it's criminal that goal got ruled out. That is a perfectly good goal. I don't care what you say. It is a perfectly good goal.
The theory of VAR is good. VAR is meant to fix decisions like the Liverpool game last season.
Which we talked about in the last episode, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So exactly, that's my point, is without VAR, some kid and his dad may have went to their first game, and they were robbed of their first ever win together. But this time, at the Sheffield game, this man was robbed of their first ever goal together. With VAR. So it just, the theory of VAR is meant to fix major decisions.
Clear and obvious, yeah.
Right. Now,
the clear and obvious decisions, yes.
Now, our friend Andy would argue that, you know, there's some things it's not clear and obvious. It's supposed to be.
No, it's a rule.
It's a rule.
It's offside, handball, and penalty encroachment. Those are the three things that I argued with Bobby Madley last week that we discussed. Those are my three issues with that. I don't have any other issues. Because other than that, we haven't had any major decisions be incorrect, which is ultimately what we want, right? I can't think of one refereeing decision where I look at and say, wow, that was clear and obvious. They got fucked. There hasn't been any of those this season because VAR has cleared them up, right? Yes. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
So the problem now is not the clear and obvious stuff. We've cleared that up. We've fixed that. So VAR has ultimately done what we wanted it to do. However, it is now taking away a lot of things that we used to love about the game. And even Bobby himself, I'm sorry, I keep bringing him up, and I know it's probably annoying to you guys, but he is my source for all of these questions and answers. He even said himself, we are in danger of losing the reason we fell in love with the game of football. We are in danger of that. We are very much in danger of that.
Well, if we're fixing the big problems, then it's not a bad thing. The thing is, we're ruining the little problems. And that's why I keep banging the same horse of a three-tier system. What my buddy in the other room was talking about with the offside is to then have the referee either look at it on the monitor or at Stockley Park, but without the lines, so that it's just the naked eye. If you can't decide if it's an offside or not with the naked eye and a review, the call stands. It's either confirmed that it's a good goal, it stands where you can't decide if they're offside or not by looking at it with a replay and your naked eye, or it's overturned where he was clearly offsides and the goal is no good. That way that there's no centimeters, millimeters, and all that. Sure, you're introducing a bit of an opinion or naked eye, but that way it almost eliminates the ridiculousness of these millimeter pixels from last week's podcast, whatever you can see and can't see with the naked eye on screens and all that. That eliminates the whole reason of VAR being too particular. Because like we said, VAR was mainly for major indecisions that were ridiculously wrong.
Yeah, I think I like that idea. I don't know if the referees will go for that. I don't know if IFAB will go for that. I don't know if the lawmakers – I don't know if they'll go for that. I think in theory that sounds like a good idea. But then from my experience with talking with referees now, I think they don't like the media, obviously, because the media critiques them more than –
whether they got it right or wrong.
But here's the thing. In that case – then that line is going to come up, and that line goes across there. They're like, well, actually, he was offside, but they couldn't tell. It's like, I think that's going to be their argument to that, is they're still going to have this controversy of the media puts that line there now, and then, oh, look, he's offside. And then you're going to get your arguments like you were telling me with the Sheffield United fans that, oh, see, he was actually offside. He actually was. So I think you'll get a bit of both. I don't know that there's a perfect answer to this. I don't know if there's a perfect solution. I really don't. I don't know. I don't really know how the MLS works. How does the MLS do offside? Do you know?
No, I don't really. I mean, I like the Philadelphia Union. I watch the games, but I used to be more into it. The Philadelphia Union almost turned me off for a while, so I've kind of gotten out of MLS.
I still like it.
I still like the Union, but I don't follow as much tight as I used to.
Well, I would just like to know how these other countries are doing VAR offsides, and if they're this close. Now, if they're using the same system that we are and they're just not talking about it because it's not as popular, then maybe that's the case. But I think we need to work towards a good solution for this, for, again, the 3 points I talked about last week: the offside rule, handball and attacking play, and encroachment on penalties. Encroachment on penalties, less so, but I think – to fix encroachment on penalties, all you would have to do is say if the player that encroaches is the first to touch the ball, then or if he interferes, a player encroaches and interferes with a player getting to the ball, then that would fix that. Again, if you missed last week's episode, Bobby's solution was you kill the game. It is a one chance a goal. The ball is dead after the goalie touches it or after it hits the back of the net. It's
almost
just dead.
A shootout in hockey.
Yeah, you don't need anyone standing on the line to come into the area. It's a dead ball. They stand on the halfway line or somewhere back, further back there, so they're not even talking or taunting or anything like that. You get your Mark Noble and you get your Kasper Schmeichel. Mark Noble shoots it. If he scores, it's a good goal. If it's saved, the play is dead and there's no rebound, there's no follow up, there's nothing like that. That's your penalty. That's your one chance. It's a goal kick the other way if it's a save.
Yep.
I think that's the best solution.
I like it. It reminds me of hockey. When you have a penalty shot is awarded instead of a penalty for 2 minutes or
exactly.
5 minutes, whatever it is. They do the penalty shot, and then it's a face-off.
Exactly.
No rebound, no nothing.
Nope. So. And that I think that's – I mean, why should an attacker be able to follow up his – like, the goalkeeper makes a great save. Why should he be able to follow up his shot and tap it home?
I agree. I mean,
you're rewarding him twice.
The keeper already did well enough to save it on a ridiculous – I mean, it's 12 yards, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, the goalkeeper already did a hard enough job. I almost agree with that. I agree that it should be a dead ball after a penalty kick.
Yep, so we're on the same page with that this week, so we're good on that.
Well, I'm glad we finally got on the same page with something here.
And then, like I said, the handball, it needs to be amended to in the immediate buildup. So the player that handles it scores, or if the player handles it and then it's one pass, like quick pass, and it's in the back of the net. But if it's 30 yards from goal, and again, I don't know how exactly you write that law. I don't know how you differentiate how far is too far, how close is too close. I don't know.
I mean, there's so much that goes – there's so many different factors into that decision.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And we have a big VAR decision coming up right now in the Leicester-Southampton game. Looks like – the ball may have touched a hand or an offside, or I don't know. We won't go into it.
This is live podcasting, folks. This is real-time data. Brawley has the game won. I'm just looking out my window when I podcast. So
game was ruled out. The goal was ruled out correctly. Well,
Burnley had a goal ruled out for offside against Chelsea. I didn't get to see how close that was. That was already this morning as well, even though Chelsea's up, I believe, 3-0. Just a side note.
But we can finish up our VAR discussion. One couple of things I want to say about the game really quickly is Snodgrass. I love him being able to put the effort in at the end of the game. I love that he's a spark plug. Did you see his deliveries when he came into the game too?
Incredible.
His first touch of the ball, Haller scored. Excuse me.
Offside though. But yeah. Yes.
Correctly offside, but a great ball. Yep. Fantastic ball.
And then he whipped another one in a few minutes later.
And in that case, well, I think on the pitch it was ruled offside, right?
Yes.
But even if that wasn't ruled offside by the linesman, VAR, I think, correctly would have ruled that out and no one would have had a problem with it because it was pretty obvious that he was offside.
It was clear offside.
In that case, it works. And I'm not saying in all cases it's terrible, but I'm saying on the whole, it's doing more bad than good right now. That's the point I want to get across. So Snodgrass, very good. I thought Fornals, when he came on, he didn't do a whole lot, but he was lively, so that was good.
Had 7 minutes to do so.
Yeah, and that's a criticism I would have had of Moyes of why you didn't A, start him, B, bring him on in the 45th minute, or C, bring him on in the 60th minute, or 70th minute for that sake. Why'd you wait till 80 to bring him on? But I do think there were positives to take out of this game. Whether you do or not is a different thing. But I think there were positives to take away from this game. And I think let me put this on the record, on January 11th at 10:30 a.m. Central U.S. time, I do not think West Ham have any chance of going down this season. We are in trouble. I will say we are in trouble, but I do not think we're going to go down. And at the end of the season, I don't think it'll even be close. I think we'll be clear by 5 or 8 points, which will be good. And then we can move on to next season. But I don't think we're going to go down.
No, I don't think we go down either. I agree with you there. The other thing I wanted to say about Snodgrass is I thought that he played an incredible game on his time on the field, and which goes back to my tweet that I put out yesterday. And I meant no disrespect to him whatsoever, but with the quality players that we do have, he should not be the difference maker. He is a very good player off the bench, and I like Robert Snodgrass. He puts in the energy. He puts in the performance. I think that West Ham fans want. He puts in the hard-working performance that I want, at least. I can't speak for all West Ham fans that I want. However, I was very frustrated that our key high-performing, high-paid players just aren't doing it, and players like Snodgrass. Now, Noble, I think, had a poor game yesterday, but it's Noble on a lot of occasions as well, where he plays in Rice. These players that are on the lower end of the wage and are not flashy, high-quality players that are the difference makers, and they shouldn't be. The difference makers every week should be Felipe Anderson, Antonio when he's not injured, which has proven that he has been, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Yarmolenko, where's he been? Probably injured. I can't imagine that he wouldn't be in the 18 if he wasn't. Allaire, Lanzini. I mean, these are guys that need to step up. I think I even moaned about it earlier in the podcast. I just find that extremely annoying that our difference maker players just aren't showing up, and it's frustrating.
Yep. So let's go into, we have a very brief question and answer segment here. And I also have a couple of comments I want to read out on my personal Twitter. So the first question we have here is from Ian Tricerri, at I-T-R-I-C-E-R-R-I on Twitter.
Who I met at the West Ham Way event when I was over earlier in the year.
Oh, cool. He's a good guy. Amazing. He sounds like a great dude. He interacts with us a lot. So it's awesome.
We appreciate the interactions.
Yep. And his question is, do you think we need to begin recruiting more players with pace? I think we have looked very pedestrian for a long time now with slow guys. So do you think we need to buy players that have more pace? Do we need to get faster?
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I think it also entails players to use their speed. For example, Anderson's not slow. He can push the ball around people and get by them with pace and skill. Similar, Antonio does the same thing, except you see Antonio run the ball down and just with pure strength, just push the ball past people. Fredericks, same thing. I'd like to see him use his pace more, bomb down the lines. Other than that, though, our team is very slow. Mark Noble, Rice isn't the fastest but not the slowest. Lanzini, Allaire's a big dude. If you have someone pacey, like, I really liked that Antonio Allaire pairing.
Mm-hmm.
That was a nice pairing. But yeah, I agree. Our team is very, very slow.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we need to buy players that not necessarily only on pace, but I think it's an attribute that we should be looking more into, because I do think our side is very slow and bulky at the moment, especially now that Zabaleta is replacing Fredericks. I think that, I mean, you got even slower then. People said Zabaleta had a horrendous game. I didn't think he had that bad of a game. I thought he was actually okay. His deliveries weren't great. I mean, I don't know what you expect from him. He's 40 years old, I think, isn't he? He's getting up there.
He's got to be like 37 or something.
The next one here is from Ben at BL Willard 24. He says, Moyes said in the interview that we look good despite losing, but I beg to differ, so he agrees with you. Do you think four at the back or five at the back should be the way forward under Moyes? So did you like the four at the back that he played, or do you like the five we played against Gillingham?
I'm not even worried about the back line. I would just like to see if we're going to go three in the back or five in the back, whatever, three in the back with wing backs. I want to see them overlap more. And I want to see a little bit more interplay with pace. I think the problem I have with the wing backs, and you don't have Fredericks, is Zabaleta on the outside is slow. And it's not his fault he's slow. He just is. You know, he has other attributes. Pace is not one of them. I really, really liked the outside backs when Fredericks was there. I thought when he used his pace and he overlapped with Antonio on the outside too, oh, man, incredible.
So,
to answer the question, I would like to go three to five in the back, but I was surprised that Diop didn't start this week as well.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what's going on there with Diop. I don't know if they're thinking about selling him or what. I really don't know, because I would think that he'd play over Balbuena, because I think Balbuena's been shocking. Oh, one thing I want to say. What's funny is David Martin's probably thrilled that VAR is the talking point and not David Martin himself. I don't think David Martin's fully to blame on that goal. I thought Balbuena could have at least stuck a leg out or at least slid to try to control that ball and shield it. And he could have played that ball and he didn't. He just pulled out to try to defend it and he ends up making a complete mess of it. So I think equal blame between David Martin and Balbuena should be to blame there. But I don't think anyone's mad at David Martin. But if that were Roberto in goal, Roberto would be absolutely getting just slaughtered for that mistake.
It was David Martin's first mistake, which not even close to Roberto's 17. So, I mean, back on David Martin for a moment, I feel like it was really, really disappointing to see that happen. Same with Balbuena. I think Balbuena didn't. He kind of just randomly ran to the ball, and Martin's like, okay, and it was a misplaced pass. So I think, yes, I agree that they're both to blame. I just hit it up the field. Just hit it up the field. I'll keep going. Next question. I don't even.
AJ Simmons, 1987, says, the mediocre team performance, the disallowed equalizer, and I think whether we get relegated or not is going to come down to a point or two all combined to make this one sting more than it probably should. So more just a comment than
You disagree with that because you think we're going to be 5 or 6 clear, right?
Hopefully, yes. I mean, I hope he's wrong. I mean, no one can say whether I'm right or he's right. I'm hoping I'm right. Yeah.
Well, one thing that's I thought was interesting. I think who's the guy? Kevin Slade.
From Sex, Drugs, and Carlton Cole.
He posted a picture with our next 12 fixtures coming up. And could you imagine, just think about it, if we would have beat Sheffield on Friday night, last night, what people would be looking, how would you look at the fixtures? Probably most likely you would be looking at it different than you look at it today. I firmly believe that. If we would have won, it would have taken us up to 25 points, about 10th, between 10th and 14th, something like that, maybe 12th. And we'd be trying to push for a top 10 finish because we'd be on 25 just off top 10, looking at the Everton game next week, thinking, oh, okay, maybe. And then looking at Leicester and being like, okay, well, maybe we can try and nab them even though they're in second. We already beat number 5 or whatever since everybody's hyping up Sheffield, you know. And then going into Liverpool thinking, oh, maybe it's a midweek and they'll be worrying about something else. But instead, now we're looking at these next 12 fixtures, like, where are we going to get points? Because we all have a negative outlook.
Yeah, and that's probably fair.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah, that's true. One thing I wanted to say briefly that I forgot to mention earlier. If you're a Sheffield United fan and you could pick one team to have a VAR decision – a lucky VAR decision go against you, I think it would be, well, one would be Sheffield Wednesday, but obviously they're not in the same league. Number two would be West Ham United, I think. I think they have zero sympathy for us for what we've done in the Carlos Tevez masks and all that stuff, which I find the Tevez masks just silly. Yeah,
I think the Tevez situation was funny. I thought it was just corny to wear Tevez masks, though. Like, come on.
Yeah, and just go to the fucking game. Rubbing the salt in the wound. I mean, for now, I mean, who's laughing now? They're fifth in the league, in the Premier League. Sure, they spent a bunch of seasons in the Championship, but they're above us now in the league, and they took a lot of our money, so who's laughing at the end of the day? So I just wanted to say that I thought that I'm sure Sheffield United fans have absolutely zero sympathy for us, and that I say fair play to them for thinking that, because we have given them a lot of shit over the years for the Tevez gate. But anyway, I think that'll about do it this week. Do you have anything else we need to add?
No, I don't have anything else. Who do we have up next game again?
I believe it is Everton. And it's going to be
next Saturday, 10 o'clock Eastern, 3 o'clock England, 9 a.m. in Central Chicago, your time. 7 a.m. Yep. out west. So
it's the
Everton at the London Stadium. What are your thoughts?
I don't even know. Everton are currently winning 2-0 against Brighton.
Nope, they seem 1-0, VAR, foul.
They've ruled it out. Wow. So it's 1-0. They're probably going to win. And I tell you what, it shows Carlo Ancelotti. They hire Carlo Ancelotti. We hired David Moyes. It shows the two different ambitions of the club, doesn't it? And that's all I'll say. I think it's
well, look at the table. They shot right up the table. They were below us. We were like, oh man, wouldn't it be funny if Everton get relegated? They're so poor this season. Because I feel like West Ham and Everton is where I imagine us being. Like, I feel like we're about fairly similar club status. I don't think they're that much bigger than us. I think that they just make better business decisions and player personnel decisions. But here they are. They were below us, and now with a few good results and another win today, they've shot right up the table.
Yeah, and Southampton just scored to take the lead against Leicester and late on in the 87th, 88th minute, Danny Ings. So they are just absolutely rocketing up the table.
Yep, Southampton will be on 28 points. Everton's now on 28 points. Arsenal, with their result today, on 28. Palace on 29. I mean, we're all these teams just jumped right above us, and now here we are, 16th, 2 points off the drop zone.
So to get back to your original question, what do I think is going to happen? I think I would take a draw in this game. I think they are probably the better team. And I would be happy with I'll say it's a 1-1 draw. That's what I'll go for. I don't see us winning this game.
I think this is a must win. I really do. I think
so. It must win. So if we don't win, we're going down. Is that what you're saying?
I think if we do not win, we are going to be in serious trouble. I don't think we go down, and I do think we win. I really do. I'm not trying to be deluded after I just shit on us the whole podcast. And by the way, my negative attitude, I love West Ham. And I want us to win every game. And I feel like I'm typically more positive. I was just very annoyed with people. I think there's a lot of people ignoring how bad we played. But there's a lot of people saying we played well because we ran around hard. Okay, whatever. Back to the what I think about Everton, though, is I think that if we come out, I think we can beat Everton at home. I think if we come out strong, I think we have a good enough side to beat them. I think that they're a slightly better team. But I really...
Better manager.
And a much better manager or experienced manager. But I think if we play our game and we play well and everything works out, we can get a result. But we have to start getting results. Or it's gonna, or we are going to be in trouble. But I think so we do beat Everton. So I'm going to guess 2-1.
Must win. You're saying must win right now in January?
Yeah, I think it's a must win. I think that you need to. Yeah, I think it's a must win for mentality purposes.
For mentality purposes. So for the season, though, you're not.
Not for relegation purposes, for mentality purposes. If you don't start getting wins, it's going to creep back in that we're in trouble. And I think we have a good enough team to stay up. But if we don't start getting results, yeah, I think we could be in trouble. So I think, yes, it's a must win for mentality.
What's your score?
2-1.
2-1 West Ham. I would love that. I hope that happens. I'm going to say 1-1. I think that'll wrap it up this week. I think a very lively episode. I think people are going to enjoy it, so that's good. You can follow me on Twitter at Brawley Darbin. You can follow Tony on Twitter at Tony Clark Doop, D-O-O-P, on Twitter. You can follow our podcast on Twitter at West Ham Way US Pod. If you guys would like to send us an email, we are always open to suggestions and criticisms, that sort
positive
of stuff.
Positive and negative, yep.
Yep, both either one. And you can send them to the West Ham Way USA Podcast at gmail.com or just West Ham Way USA Podcast at gmail.com. Either one, they go to the same email address. You can also, if you would, go please leave us a 5-star review and rating on iTunes. It helps us get in more people's ears. That's what we want at the end of the day. So if you could leave us a nice review there, that'd be fantastic. Other than that, that's it. Hopefully we're going to be talking to you next week after we beat Everton, hopefully, or a draw after Everton. I'd be happy to talk to you after a draw with Everton. But other than that, we're done this week. We'll talk to you guys next week. See you later.
Irons.